Hi, everyone. Like Sarah said, my name is Sarah Saunders. I appreciate everybody coming out. I know the tribe was playing and it's kind of crunch time, so and I'm not sure what's going on with the weather, but I know there's, I think I heard a storm. But again, thanks for coming out. So like Sarah mentioned, I am a licensed professional counselor and I work at Megan Fargo & Associates. Part of some of the things we're going to be talking about is flexibility, and that's something I'm experiencing right now with these technical difficulties. So the presentation that I'm doing tonight is on survival strategies, how to improve family function. So first we're going to start out with family communication. Communication refers to the way verbal and nonverbal information is exchanged. This can be exhausting. I don't know about all of you, but as a therapist, I communicate every single day with my clients. I'm talking all the time, and then I go home, and I'm talking with my husband. I go to the store. You're talking. You're communicating. And it takes a lot out of you. You have to be attentive to what others are thinking and feeling. There's four different styles of communication that I briefly want to go over. So basically, the example that I want to use is think of a father that's disappointed that his son failed to complete a chore. So clear and direct communication. This father would say, "Son, I'm disappointed that you forgot to take out the trash today without my having to remind you." Then there's a second style of communication, which is clear and indirect communication. So using that same example, the father would say, "It's disappointing when people forget to do their chores." So it's clear, but it's pretty indirect, vague. Masked and direct communication, the father would say, "Son, people just don't work as hard as they used to." The fourth style of communication is called masked and indirect communication. The father would say, "The youth today are just so lazy." So basically, with all of this being said, the more clear and direct families' communication, the more effective it will be. And then on the flip side, the more masked and indirect the communication, the less effective it will be. So keys to building effective communication. Communicate frequently. Talk in the car. Turn the electronic devices off. And I'm guilty of this. Parents, this goes for us too. One of the most difficult challenges facing families today is finding time to spend together. I was actually pretty alarmed when I read a recent study in the Wall Street Journal. There was a survey that said 40% of respondents stated that lack of time was a greater problem than lack of money. So we need to make time. By a raise of hands, how many of you eat dinner as a family? Okay, so it's about 50-50. Eat dinner together. That's a huge way to improve communication in the family. We're gonna talk more about, you know, strategies that we can do specifically with dinner time, but dinner is a huge component. Schedule informal or family meetings. By a raise of hands, how many people have family meetings? Weekly, monthly? Okay. Talk to your children at bedtime. That's a great way for that winding down, unplug time, and just that communication. Communicate clearly and directly. Get the person's attention before speaking. I think that this truly is one of the hardest parts of communication. Often kids and adults, we can only concentrate on one thing at a time. So look directly at the person you're talking to. Say their name. Make sure that they are making eye contact with you. Give them a moment to make that eye contact so you know that they're paying attention. Make requests simple. So my husband and I, he's pretty honest with me, pretty direct. I have about a 10 to 12 second window of his attention, so I have to make sure that I'm pretty direct and I'm pretty clear on what it is that I want him to do. I'm guilty of it. I'm a wordy person. Raise of hands, how many people are wordy people? I see a lot of women. That's right. So we're wordy, and that's okay, but we need to try and use fewer words, be more clear and more direct with things that we want. Talk with your children, not at them. I'm guilty of this. I don't know about you guys, but one of the hardest things is being actually talking to them. Let them, if you talk with them, it lets them know that not only you have something to tell them, but you're also willing to listen to what they have to say. Does that make sense? Be an active listener. Listen to what others are saying. Try your best to understand the point of view of the other person. I had a kiddo in my office that he could not for the life of him tie his shoes. This poor little thing, so frustrated. Teachers were getting upset. Mom was setting the timer, telling him, if you don't tie your shoes, you know, there's gonna be a consequence. She finally, we talked about getting down to his level, understand his point of view. He was so frustrated that, you know, dismay in his face, his, you know, crunched eyebrows, everything. He was so upset. His coordination and his fine motor skills were lacking. We got him Velcro shoes and it was fine. So make sure that we are picking and choosing our battles, but also really understanding the point of view of the kid. They're not trying to be defiant. They're not trying to be oppositional. They're just having a hard time. So look at their point of view. Pay attention to their nonverbal and verbal messages. So again, he wasn't able to verbalize, "Mom, I can't tie my shoes because my fingers don't work like that," but she could tell in his nonverbal messages. So be aware of that. Respond by nodding your head and saying, "I understand." I don't know about you, but to feel understood and to have validation, it makes me feel good. So it's important that we are using our nonverbals to nod our head, let people know that we're listening, making eye contact. Ask for clarification if needed. Misunderstanding is so frustrating. Feeling misunderstood or not understanding what someone's trying to say. So things that you could say is, you know, "Help me understand. What did you mean when you said fill in the blank? Did I understand you correctly?" These are just a few examples of ways that we can ask for clarification. Think about the person with who you are communicating. Not all members of the family communicate in the same manner or at the same level, especially children. So we can't assume that we're going to talk to an adult like we would a three-year-old. We have to change our language and use age-appropriate language. And listen carefully to what your child is saying without making assumptions. So as the previous slide stated, in regards to the clarification, make sure that you're asking clarifying questions and you're not just assuming something. So again, paying attention to those nonverbal messages. So again, it's exhausting having to communicate and deal with all of this. So being aware of the words you say in addition to the facial expressions and body language. Be aware of your posture and the other person's posture. Eye contact, gestures with hands and arms, speech and tone of voice. Those are some of the big triggers to look for. Be positive. Give compliments, words of encouragement, smile, hugs, high fives, and catch someone being kind and praise them. Again, recognition and validation feels good. So catch your child doing something kind and praise them. Celebrate what they did and make it known. On the flip side, let's be careful not to shame our child if they're doing something unexpected, something we don't want them to do. Rather than telling them, "No, don't do this," tell them what they can do instead, and then practice it. So now I'm going to get into more of the home strategies. So we're going to be discussing dinner time, bedtime routines, and transitions. And honestly, while I was doing this presentation, I thought, my goodness, I could do a whole presentation on just dinner time. I could do a whole presentation on bedtime routines or transitions. I am very willing to answer any questions that you have. Any feedback that you have would be helpful. And these things are going to be pretty brief in regards to some of the strategies for all three of these, but I would be more than happy to go more in depth at a later time. So dinner and meal preparation. So again, we had the raise of hands. It was about 50-50 of how many families eat together. By a raise of hands, how many people would like to be eating dinner as a family? Okay, I saw more hands this time. Make dinner together with the kids. Have your child help prepare dinner once a week. Sequencing is used for many skills. So for example, you know, if you're making pizza, helping them understand rolling out the dough, spread the sauce, sprinkle the cheese, bake the pizza, cut it and eat it. Having them be involved in this is really important.
Also, another thing is, you know, what's for dinner? Encourage your child to look around and make guesses about what is for dinner. You know, what do you see? What do you smell? How is the table set? Prompt children to ask questions to get clues. This is a really great way to interact with the kids and make it a fun guessing game. Another thing is, you know, where does food come from? I don't know how many of you think about where food comes from. It's not normally something I think about. And we live in a society where it's so fast-paced, and we have, you know, access to fast food restaurants, and everything is so instant. So oftentimes kids, they want food and they want it now, and they think it just magically appears, which it doesn't. So ask your child to think about what origin of food it comes from. For example, you know, explaining to them about how farmers plant crops and they harvest them. Children can imagine what it would be like. Get in that, you know, have them think of that image in their head. Be in the moment and ask them, what would it be like to work on a farm? Or that various ingredients in this salad came from all different places. This creates a deeper appreciation for the food for these kids, and it also helps realize that it doesn't just magically appear. One of the things I've had some families talk about, and especially with the holidays coming up, is formal dinners. So occasionally, it's good to have formal dinners with your family, practicing it maybe once a month, using cloth napkins, and having a formal place setting. Maybe you could have one of the kiddos or you or your spouse act out being the waiter and sequence through those types of things. So again, taking the order, don't even have the drinks out on the table, wait for the drinks. You know, teach that waiting, that compliance. Do this just with the family to start with, but this is a great way to practice. So if you ever have company over, if you're going to a restaurant, if you're going to someone's house, it's a really great way, again, to kind of give kids an idea of what to expect. Because when there's the unknown or something's unpredictable, that can be really frustrating for kids. So practice these types of things. Now we're going to move into battle-free bedtime. So let's be honest, we all are super busy, and you guys are the experts. You know your kids better than anyone. You know what works for you and what doesn't. There's no one-size-fits-all bedtime routine. I wish I could stand up here and I had a magic wand, or I could tell you a specific equation that would make bedtime a success. But you guys know what works, and here's going to be some things that we're going to talk about to kind of add to that. So whatever your routine is, stick with it. One of the biggest things is unplug and wind down. Like we talked about with communication, it's important to have all attention at one thing. Long before your kiddos' heads hit the pillow, your kiddo will need to start processing winding down. And this is not just with our body, but with our brain as well. So an hour before bedtime, and statistically it shows an hour before bed, having no caffeine and no screens. This is computer, TV, video games, and iPad. Screens actually mirror daylight, and that stimulates our brain, and it tricks us into thinking that it's still daytime. And so making sure that we have an hour before bed where we are completely unplugged is really important. Setting the mood. So aim for low lighting and soft lights. If your child needs music to go to sleep, that's absolutely fine. Again, you know what works best. But go with music only, not music that has lyrics or a high tempo, but something very soft and mellow. This is a big one, and I think this is one of the hardest ones, but aim to stay within the sleep environment. And that means doing things in the child's bedroom. You know, aim to stay there, not going into your bedroom or going into the living room, but when it's time to wind down, do things in their sleep environment. The other thing is resist the plea to leave the bedroom. So I can't help but chuckle sometimes when some of these parents tell me some of the excuses that these kids, you know, say, oh, I have to go give the dog a kiss goodnight, and they'll run out of their bedroom. or, oh, I need one more snack or a glass of water. You know, try and be proactive as much as you can. Try and do those things. If they need a snack before they go to bed, absolutely. If they want to give the dog 5 kisses before bed, have at it. But let's make sure that we're being proactive and allowing them to do those things before they go into the bedroom so they don't have any excuse to leave that environment. So lack of sleep affects many areas of our life. Our mood, our responses, our motivation, attentiveness, communication, the list goes on. You will be getting handouts that will provide a slide that actually has the age and then the sleep required. So depending on the age of your kiddo, there is a set required amount of hours that the child should be sleeping. So again, we're busy. Society is busy. And so acknowledging that we all have busy schedules, there's different activities each night, it makes it really difficult to have a set bedtime. And so just be aware of whether or not you're getting your child to sleep at a certain time. Are they getting the required hours that they need in order to, you know, be sufficient throughout the day? And again, this is a great way, again, to assess using our nonverbal communication. Be aware of, you know, are they yawning a lot? How are their, how are they behaving? Those are all ways to kind of indicate whether or not they have enough sleep. So make a plan. Exactly what you do before bedtime is a mix of personal preference and practicality, like we talked about. One size doesn't fit all, so whatever works for you, that's totally fine. But just make sure that the routine is smooth and consistent. So if some plans include, you know, the snack, bath, brushing teeth, putting on PJs, reading together, talking together, do whatever works best for you and your family, but try and keep it as consistent as possible. Even if we go to grandma and grandpa's, you know, have this written down so that they know what to do. The more that we can have kids have a routine and they can predict what's happening next, the better that they'll be able to manage through transitions. So once you have your plan, write it down and share it with your kids. You know, visuals are often very helpful depending on the age of the kiddos. If you can write it down and they're able to read it, you know, crossing it off is often helpful, but just letting them see those things and what's coming next is really helpful. So now we're going to transition to transitions. So transitions refer to a change. Change is unknown, it's unpredictable, it's stressful, it's overwhelming, and it's difficult to understand. By a raise of hands, how many people fear change? Thanks for being honest. Change is hard. Change is really hard. The unknown is even harder. When we don't know what's to come, it creates anxiety, it creates uncertainty, and with that creates behaviors. And so it's important to understand transitions for anyone, especially for kids, is difficult. So give advance warning. You cannot expect kids to stop what they're doing on a dime. Oftentimes, time is blurry to kids. So if you're saying you have 10 minutes, that's not very meaningful to some kids. So set a timer or play a song. You can reiterate what will happen. Again, letting them know when the timer goes off, when the song stops, this is what we're going to do. But give them, you know, something tangible so they know how much time that they have when they don't really understand time. Another thing is, you know, at the grocery store, when the kids just want to leave and they're having a hard time, make it a game. You know, the mission is for us to, we're going to have 5 items on the list. We're going to, and we can use sequencing with this too. So we have 5 items. We have to find these 5 items. We're going to put them in the cart. And then when we're done with the cart, then we get to check out and leave. Letting them know what's happening. You can use I Spy with this. You know, I spy something, you know, green with, that almost looks like a tree. broccoli, right? Help them find these things, mark that item off, and then be able to transition.
Just gonna check. Did everybody get a copy of the handout? Okay, good, thank you.
Awesome, thank you. So develop rituals. So what this means is that the predictability of a set routine gives a child a sense of control and order. So help your child predict what's going to happen next. And we're going to discuss this further on the next slide, but it is important to have that routine. So keep your language simple. Again, going back to less words, more clear and direct communication. So rather than a long, in-depth explanation as to why your child needs to sit at the dinner table, try kneeling down right in front of them and whispering. Whisper spaghetti. Or going back to the I spy something red on the table. What do you think it is? Make it a game. Make it something that you have their attention and they can transition. We can be sneaky and use redirection, and it can be pretty productive. So again, change the tone of our voice, have an accent if you want, some way to do something different to catch their attention. Whispering 9 out of 10 times, kids can't help but get closer to you and lean in because they can't hear you. So you have to repeat yourself. Offer choices. This is one of my favorites. So presenting kids with choices is a great way to give them options, and it gives them room to cooperate. So don't give too many choices, but an example, do you want to wear your shoes or do you want to wear sandals? Do you want me to carry the bag or do you want to carry the bag? Again, adults, we're in control, but the kids think they are. They think that they're choosing, which they are making that choice, but we have the parameters into what those choices are. The more that we can reason with them and communicate that way rather than talking at them, do this, you don't have a choice, that's just a power struggle. So choices are really important. This is a really hard one, and I know I'm guilty of it. We do things in the moment and it can be really difficult, but try to avoid making threats because we just get ourselves in trouble with this one. And talk about a power struggle. Threats are a huge power struggle. So if your shoes aren't on your feet by the time I count to 10, fill in the blank. You know, your iPad's taken away, or we're not going. We're making these threats that more than likely we're gonna give them back their iPad. We're still gonna have to go wherever we're going, but we just say things. So these are empty threats that we're making. You know, try and change our words to, you know, I see that you don't want to come along. You're having a tough time. How can I help you? I notice that you're having trouble putting your shoes on. Let me do one shoe and you do the other one. Love and understanding will get you so much further with your kids and even with your spouse than shaming them or guilt. Now we're going to go back to sequencing. We've talked about sequencing a lot with these different aspects, but teach your child that things happen in sequence. First this, then this. Provide positive reinforcement or incentives. So first, pick up your toys, then we can go for a walk. Teaching transition words as well is really, really helpful. So I have some examples on this slide. So, you know, first you roll the ball to me, then I roll it back to you. This is something that you can practice and the kids can see that this is a transition. Now we're watching Thomas. After, we'll bake cookies. Your brother is first in the bath, and then you're next. You can have a drink after you wash your hands. Let's line up the toys. Teddy's first, Nemo's next, Spider-Man is last. Again, like we were talking with dinner prep, teaching them the sequence of when food comes out, what we have to do to make the pizza. If we're at the grocery store, first we get the items, we put it in the cart, then we check out, then we leave. Letting them know what happens so that they don't have to always feel like there's a change or they can predict things as much as they can. The bottom line is that the more a child can predict and participate in schedules and activities, the less likely challenging behavior will occur. So I have some resources that I wanted to share with you. So I'm not sure if anyone has heard of Michelle Garcia Winters, but she is absolutely wonderful. I've seen her speak, and she does amazing work. Her website is filled with resources and articles, tools for a wide range of social thinking topics across the lifespan. She has a lot of things that, you know, she offers for free on her website, and I have the link on there. And then also I checked out with this library, and there's many books of hers available. The handout that I gave you were some ways to help with transitions as well as bedtime and making social learning stick, how to guide and nurture social competence through everyday routines and activities. This book is probably one of my favorites, and they have a plethora of different, kind of tangible ways to work with your kiddo through, you know, holiday type things, bedtime routine, morning routines, holidays with Halloween coming up, you know, trick or treating, things like that. So that's also a really great resource. And like Sarah had mentioned in the beginning, I am with Dr. Megan Barlow and Associates, so I have some of my information on how to contact me. And then now we are open to doing any questions and answers, and we can discuss anything that you guys have questions on. Yes, those of you who didn't hear, she has a timer that her kids use that actually it's in red, the time that is left. Current timers, some of the kiddos that I work with, sensory issues, so, you know, the beeping and the noises on the iPads, things like that, that can be overstimulating, so sand timers are also really good. Sometimes we just have to remind them, make sure you're looking at the sand timer, because they might not have their attention on that, but that's a great example. Any other questions? So those of you who didn't hear, we had a question. We have a two-year-old who's transitioning from a crib, to a bed. And so right now there's some co-sleeping that's happening. The two-year-old's in, the parent's bed. It's not uncommon. Don't feel like you're alone. Sometimes, you know, I'm a huge advocate of play. And so, you know, whatever his favorite toy is, acting that out, you know, oh, it's time to go to bed. Here's where we're gonna go to bed. Make that very inviting. Social stories, I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with social stories, but that's another way. You can go online. I mean, technology's wonderful these days. You can Google and they have, you know, some different things that you can get, but even just a Word document of creating a story about what it's like, when it's time to go to bed, this is what we do. Again, with that sequencing. It's going to be hard at first. Again, change is difficult, it's unknown, so it might get worse before it gets better, but that consistency is important, absolutely. So we have a 10-year-old who's a good negotiator. We've been giving him choices, but he likes to negotiate. Can you give me an example of maybe the most recent negotiation you guys had? What does it look like? Okay, sure. So we want to set our kids up for success. Have you ever talked to him, asked him, you know, the amount of homework, half of the homework, is that too much for him at one time? Do you feel that he's capable of doing that without having a break?
Yes.
Okay. And so, you know, then the choice is we can do half of our homework and we can watch TV, or we cannot do our homework and no TV. You choose. Does that make sense? It sounds easier said than done, absolutely. But again, being clear and direct and letting him know with your facial expressions, with your posture, with your tone of voice, buddy, this is how it's gonna be. You can choose if you wanna watch that half hour, or you can choose if you don't do anything. And again, if we want to make him, you know, set him up for success, I always revert back to, okay, let's do one worksheet and then you can have some, you can have a break. Then do the other worksheet, you know, kind of backtrack, because again, trying to put ourselves in their shoes and figure out, like, is this overwhelming for him? Is he having trouble? You know, just talk to him, get on his level, try and understand, you know, what's going on. Sure. So we have a strong-willed three-year-old that is having a hard time eating, trying new things. So I just read, and I can't remember what the exact number is, but when there's a new food, kids have to, like, they have to visually see it, then they have to touch it, then they kind of, like, figure out if this is something they want to do or not, and then, like, they taste it, and it could take, like, 4, 5, 6 times for them to really get acclimated with that. So I'm not sure if, like, maybe it's a vegetable or a piece of fruit, talking to them about it. You know, again, play is huge, especially with a 3.5-year-old. You know, oh, Elmo, he sees the apple. What do you think Elmo should do? Should he smell the apple? Should he pick the apple up? You know, just getting him to kind of, you know, understand what this new thing is, because it's different. And then also, if you know his preferred foods that he likes, you know, kind of bite for bite. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before, but okay, hey bud, let's try a bite of this broccoli, and then we get a bite of the Oreo. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. And this is what I love, because you guys are the experts. You know your kids better than anyone, and I promise you, you're not going to screw your kid up. And so try things. It's absolutely okay, because if we try something and it doesn't work, what do we know? That doesn't work. But if we don't try different things and get creative, then we're never going to know. And this is a great support, even right here. So if anyone asks a question and someone has had a similar experience, you know, we would love to hear, you know, feedback. Absolutely. So for those of you that didn't hear, we're having a hard transition going to the beach. The kids need something to do. Mom doesn't really want to go to the beach. She's going to the beach for the kids. But how do we transition? So there's a couple of things. We're like mirrors, believe it or not, but like whatever our body language is, and I work a lot with kids transitioning like into preschool, parents are having some of that separation anxiety. It's hard. And so we have to like fake it. Even if we don't want to go, you know, being so excited, we're going to the beach, and here's all this stuff that we can do, and talking them through it, because they are so intuitive. Like, it's insane. My niece is here today, who is 2, and, like, she, if I'm sad, like, she's sad. Or if I'm happy, like, she's happy. So they can read our facial expressions. They can understand, like, what we're feeling, believe it or not. So, you know, that's one thing, is to just, if we really want to go, but inside we're like, we have to train ourselves to kind of mirror that. And the other thing is, have you talked to them about why they don't like the beach? They love it. So, again, I try and make things as fun as possible when I'm working with kids. So, a mission. Your mission is to find your flip-flops. Then we're going to put them on, you know what, today, let's put them on the opposite feet. You know, just do something, and then saying like, hey, I have something in the car that I need you to get. Like, let's go out in the car. Like, so getting them out there without having them really think about the fact that they're walking out to the car. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So parents, you guys are creative. Whether or not you give yourself credit for it, allow yourself to put your creative hat on and make things fun. Because as much as we don't want to do things, how can we make it the less miserable it can be, right? Yes, sure. So co-parenting, and I give you props, that's really difficult. So a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old, we go to dad's house, but then it's time to go to mom's, and we're really struggling. You're seeing, you know, behaviors, things like that. Again, putting ourselves in that position, I mean, change is really, really hard, and it's unpredictable, and I'm not sure, you know, parenting styles, as far as if things, rules are very different at dad's than they are at mom's, it's going to take their little brains a little bit to kind of, you know, transition. So again, I would come from a place of love and empathy and understanding. Kids, I know that this is tough. You know, mommy missed you too. You know, just kind of talking to them and allowing them to, you know, to really, to know that it's okay, change is hard. Does that make sense? And praise them when you can. If there's something that they're doing well, you know, letting them know that they're doing that well. Is there, like, something specific that you notice happens a lot? Like, I heard you say they're saying pretty hurtful things.
Yeah.
Well, and think of how hard it is for you to not have control. The kids also don't have control. And so, you know, just kind of, you know, a little bit, understanding that a little bit more. But overall, I mean, that's a really tough thing. And also a calendar, sometimes I've done with some families that, you know, do the co-parenting. You know, it doesn't have to be the whole month, but for that week, you know, just, again, letting the kids know what they can predict. So we know we're going to go to dad's on Monday and Tuesday. Mom is going to be, you know, you could draw a picture. Mom is on, you know, Wednesday and Thursday, just so that, you know, they can know and talk about things for them to, like, look forward to is often helpful as well. Any other questions? How do you get a routine to stick? That is a great question. So is there a specific routine that you're thinking of? So twin 10-year-olds and a 6-year-old and how to have a routine in the morning. Getting out of bed is the first start, right? So going back to kind of our evening routine, are they sleeping well? They're sleeping well, getting enough sleep? Have you talked to them about what's difficult for them? Have you asked them, like, what's hard about getting out of bed? They just don't want to get up. Who else doesn't want to get up in the morning, right? Right? So we get that, right? So again, trying to put that creative hat on and, you know, whether having, for those 10-year-olds, do they like use an alarm or are you the alarm? What would it be like for you to be able to be there, like be awful. Present? It would be awful. Okay. Well, I appreciate your honesty. So a couple things, you know, having the alarm clock be somewhere that they physically have to get out of bed. Sometimes it's just like removing those covers and getting out of bed, that's like the hardest part, ripping that Band-Aid off. The other thing is, if I'm curious if, you know, it would be possible for you to be there when they get up. So just to kind of like, girls, like, man, are they girls or boys? Okay, girls. Like, girls, waking up is hard. You know, again, talking through it with them a little bit, but then also saying, like, you know, letting them know what's going to happen next and having that routine. And then when they do it, like, praising the crap out of them, you know, letting them know, like, wow, that was a great morning. How does everyone feel? You know, just really blowing it up as much as we can. But then also, my biggest thing is if a kid is having a hard time with something, oftentimes just talking to them about, like, what that could be. Is there a fear of, like, going to school? Do they have a hard time choosing what outfit to wear? If that's the case, then before bed, let's make that part of our bedtime routine. Okay. And I'm not sure how many other people, you know, struggle with routines, but it's not uncommon and you're not alone. But, you know, trying to just try, you know, different things. And again, consistency is the biggest thing. So even if it seems like it's not working right now, if we can't troubleshoot, just keep trying to, you know, do it. Because the more that we're exposed to that and the more that we try it, the better, you know, we get at it. Does anyone have, like, any suggestions for her or any thoughts? Absolutely. And we, right. So it's kind of one of those things, you know, just trying to be present if we can, talking them through things and figuring out, like, what is making it difficult for them to be successful. So token systems or, you know, some type of reward system is very helpful. Thank you for bringing that up. So regardless of what age it is, and it's important to note that oftentimes these systems, they work for a little bit and then parents are like, oh, it was working so well and then it just stopped. That's okay. Then we can try something else. But, you know, figuring out what the girls like, and even if it's not, you know, that bribe or that reward every time, you know, just reinforcing, you know, having that schedule of what they need to do, whether it's a star on the ceiling, a sticker, whatever it is, and then once they get so many, then at the end of the day or at the end of the week, you know, they can have a prize. And that could be, and it doesn't have to be something we spend a lot of money on. Again, technology. So having a little bit of extra, you know, screen time, staying up a little bit past their bedtime, you know, something like that, that it's a reward that they deserved because of, you know, what they did. So we have a dilemma of we want to be positive, we have this awesome positive self-talk, but then we get home and it's like the place is a mess, they didn't do their chores, and then we're reprimanding them, we're yelling, then we're feeling guilty ourselves, going to bed like, why'd I do this again? I'm the worst mom. So that, again, that's a cycle that we all go through. You know, when kids do things that we don't like, or when we're having like a tantrum ourselves, just like being present and acknowledging that, like, mom's having a really hard time right now. I see towels on the ground and they shouldn't be there. You know, it's okay for us to be, you know, be verbal in that and say, like, I'm frustrated. That's a feeling. We're allowed to be frustrated. Acknowledge that. We're in traffic. I hate traffic. I'm feeling really frustrated because there's nowhere that I can go. Asking the kids, like, can you help me? What can I do? It's pretty amazing what kids are capable of, you know, the suggestions. They might not be able to do it themselves, but they can sure feel empowered enough to tell us what to do. So kind of, you know, using that, it's okay for you to feel the way that you're feeling. Acknowledge that, and then how many of you are familiar with the 5-point scale? That's definitely something, it's not a resource I put on here, but definitely something I would encourage you to look up. But it color codes our feelings. And one of the things I often talk to my families about is we all have thermometers. So think of a thermometer when the temperature is low, like we're cool. But the higher that temperature gets, the hotter we get. And that happens with our feelings. So we have anger thermometers, we have, you know, worry thermometers, sad thermometers, whatever it is. And noticing our temperature. So if we're noticing we're getting hotter, then what do we do in that moment? Because verbally we might yell at our kids, but how can we acknowledge, like, I'm red right now, or I'm getting hot, and maybe we need to take a break? Because the more that we don't acknowledge those feelings, the more that, you know, our behaviors will escalate, the kids' behaviors will escalate, and then we're in that power struggle again. So the color coding is, you know, a really great idea. So in the moment, if we don't have the time to talk through the colors and we just need something to happen immediately.
Right.
And again, that's when I would kind of go back to, and there's some of those slides on, like, the communication. So getting to his level and, like, few words as possible, making sure that our tone of voice, we're making eye contact with him and know that he has our attention, and letting him know, like, we need to leave now. Like, the more calm that we can be, because I don't know about any of you, but, like, when I see somebody, like, stressed or, you know, kind of anxious or loud, like, that's, I kind of start to feel that way. So although there is an emergency, how can we try and keep him calm and keep ourselves calm? Does that make sense? But that's a really difficult thing. And again, sometimes things are going to work and sometimes things aren't. But the more that we can, you know, use our words and mirror our emotions to the kids is helpful.
Yeah.